www.lifeoutreach.org.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Taking Charge with Paula Robinson here on WWDB Talk 860. We've got a fantastic show. We have it's a show that's going to take you through every stage of a work injury and workers' compensation. And it's all about the work comp. And I'm ecstatic to bring in Paula Robinson, one of Pennsylvania's premier workers' compensation attorneys. Paula, how are you? Welcome to your broadcast.
Thank you.
You know, certainly, if you would just, remind our listeners a little bit about what the firm does, and then we'll talk about the new website. We'll talk about, from A to Z work comp, what you do and all those things.
Sure. I created my own law firm back in 2011, and I have been practicing for now it's 36 years. And I did defense work before I went out on my own, and I represent injured workers exclusively. That's what I do now through my practice.
So having said that, you would think, and we've talked about this a number of times before, that when somebody gets injured in a work accident, you go to your employer, I got injured, and then the benefits start rolling in until you get better and everything, is okie dokie. But that's not what happens, which is why that we need top professionals like yourself to be able to advocate and represent individuals to try to navigate it themselves and find out that insurance companies are in the business of accepting premiums, not paying out payments.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
And so let's go A to Z. Somebody gets injured on the job, okay? And let's throw a couple scenarios around. We don't have to discuss all the scenarios, but somebody gets critically injured on a job or has a catastrophic injury. Typically, okay, and it's a no-fault statute, so it doesn't matter if they cut their own finger off accidentally or somebody else does it. It's a workers' compensation situation. There could be a third party element, but my point is this: typically speaking, when it's a catastrophic injury, a collapse or something like that, a building or something, the workers' compensation, carriers are more likely to cover it because there's almost no way they can get out of it.
Yes.
Okay. You know what I mean? It was there. There's 80 witnesses. However, there's other types of catastrophic injuries where somebody pulls a neck out, a back. They might even fall, but no one's around. There was no collapse, and they were able to get up. They may not have needed an ambulance at that point. And they could be, injured seriously, and it happens all the time. What is the process at that point once somebody gets injured?
Well, if their claim is denied after they've given notice to their employer, they send it to their workers.
So let me back up. So they have to give notice first.
Yes.
Okay. So talk about notice.
Okay. One of the burdens of proof on the injured worker is that they have to give their boss, foreman, supervisor, not a coworker, notice of how they injured themselves and when it was. They can do it by phone, in person, they could do it by text or email. And actually, if they have notice in some written form, like a text that can be printed out, that's really beneficial because that's hard to deny.
Right.
But the claimant always will have the right to testify at a first hearing if a claim petition has to be filed. And they will testify as to who they gave notice to, what that person's response was, and how they gave notice and when.
Okay, so how long does somebody have to give notice if they get injured on the job? So I get injured, I pull my back out on a Friday afternoon. I want to suck it up and try to wait the weekend, to see if I'm still hurting on Monday, just because I've been working for this company for a while and I want to give them the benefit of the doubt. How long do I actually have to give notice?
You have 120 days.
Okay, and so after 120 days, say 120, 119 days, I gave notice after 119 days, and they're so gracious about it. They so appreciate my notice that they're going to just come up and give me my check, right?
No.
They're not going to just come up.
No.
So it's
best to give notice as soon as you can, because that just gives the insurance companies ammunition to fight the claim.
Okay.
And we all know they don't want to pay out money.
Right.
And it's costing them, you know.
So you're giving them a little bit of an out so that they have that you're giving them grounds to kind of dispute it. What type of disputing do they sometimes? So I got injured on the Friday. I decided I'm coming back on Monday and I'm not, you know, and you know, to you know, hopefully I'm going to be fine on Monday. But I find out on Monday I'm not quite okay. I'm actually hurting worse than I was on Friday. So I gave the contractor, the employer, the benefit of the doubt. Am I getting a big trophy on Monday? Is it a big ceremony? Are they coming out and interviewing me by, thanks so much for giving us the benefit of the doubt. You're the king of the castle. This is only 3 days, let alone 119 days. Are you still leaving them an out if you wait until Monday often to report the injury if you got injured on Friday?
They'll take any out they can get, and the answer is yes.
Yeah, I can't even imagine it. It's a confusing situation.
Well, as you said, a lot of times when you tweak your back or you're in an automobile accident or whatever the case may be, sometimes you don't feel the effects right away. It takes a few days. Like I have a case going on now where the gentleman injured himself like on a Thursday late in the day. And it wasn't until he couldn't get out of bed on Sunday morning. And right away, he gave notice. And their response is, when are you coming back?
And it's confusing. Listen, it's the same sometimes often in a car accident. When somebody gets hurt, they get out, they don't feel the effects. It's not a seemingly catastrophic situation. But the next day, maybe 2-3 days later, all of a sudden, that's when they get the pain. And we've had medical providers on who've said, that happens. Your body is in shock often.
Mm-hmm.
And so now
And the adrenaline kicks in when the accident happens.
Exactly. And so, you got to give notice, within 120 days. But obviously it's in your best interest to give notice immediately. So, so what type of, outs that the insurance providers use, in other words, what would they think you're faking it, or what do they say? Well, he didn't report it on Monday. He could have got hurt over the weekend.
Right.
What type of excuses do they use?
Well, they'll try to find witnesses to say that the injured worker did not give notice, or that the injured worker said he did it someplace other than on the job. They'll use time as a weapon. You didn't have pain at the time of the accident. They'll use pre-existing conditions. If they went to a chiropractor just for maintenance over the years, they'll try to indicate that he had problems or injuries.
So you get injured on a job, you're going to report it to your boss or your supervisor. What other evidence in a situation, like what should you do along with, obviously, and they call it giving notice to your supervisor, what else should you do at the point of injury obviously is an important part of the process?
Well, really, they should ask the employer to file an incident report or an injury report, and most employers, even though they're supposed to send the client to panel physicians and they're supposed to have a panel list of doctors to send them to, oftentimes they don't. But if you're injured, go get medical attention as soon as possible.
Can you go to the emergency room if you have to?
Sure.
Okay. So if you can take pictures if there was a situation or get witnesses, obviously, like you mentioned, a job report, an injury report, mm-hmm. all those things that would document it along with, giving the notice to the employer right away.
Yes.
And having said that, let's talk about that all important medical situation. You go to the emergency room, okay, and you have a back injury, you're in pain. They give you some, anti-inflammatories or whatever, or you have a neck injury or whatever. But it's not broke. There's no breaks, and it's not but there's a million things that could be. But right now, it's a little early in the game. The only thing you got pain. When it comes to, so as far as the long-term medical, okay, are there requirements that the company has to, follow in regards to a list of panel physicians and all that? And what are those rules that make it so that you have to go to see their doctor?
Well, all employers in Pennsylvania have to have workers' comp insurance, and they're supposed to provide each hired worker with a list of panel physicians in the event that they have a work injury. And then they're supposed to give that list to them again after the injury and let the person choose who they want to go to. But oftentimes employers either don't have a list and they don't send them anywhere, and in that case, they can go anywhere they want for treatment. If they do have panel doctors, the person is supposed to treat with them for the first 90 days in order to have their bills paid. And sometimes the insurance companies just direct them to go somewhere, even if the employer doesn't have a panel list.
Yeah, and most of that is because the worker doesn't know any better.
Right.
And we're so used to having our family doctors, people who are in our life since we were kids, right? Although the health care system's getting more wacky as the day goes on, the fact is we're so used to our doctors being our friends, our advocates, our people who are there to help us. If you don't know any better, you might go in thinking, okay, I'm going to ask the employer who I should go see. Which is probably the worst possible thing you could do. But you don't know anybody. You've been hurt.
Right.
They send you to a panel physician who very often they're getting paid by the insurance company. I've heard nightmares of diagnoses and things that people like us would never think could happen because you're so used to going to your family doctor.
Right.
Right? And so... but let's stick with that narrative. Let's say they have the 90-day, the panel they filed. First of all, how many workers have come into you and said, and you've asked them the question, was there a panel list? And they have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah,
and whether they signed a panel acknowledgement letter when they signed up for the job.
Yeah, I would say 95% of my clients don't have a clue what I'm talking about.
How do you find out if that exists?
Well, when you get into litigation, you get discovery from the other attorney. So you might not know up front, but eventually you'll find out because they have to send you the medical records.
So how do you tell the worker who, since it's such a difference between going to a panel doctor if they don't know, and a panel doctor who's getting paid by the work, who
right.
probably, who very possibly has a record of sending people back to work. I had one business agent from a union, business manager, say to me, the doctor looked at him across the room. He couldn't lift his arm up. And he said, "You're fine to go back to work."
Yeah, that happens all the time. And the people that are sent to a panel doctor, they'll get a piece of paper that will have like physical capabilities form, and it'll say can return to work. And these panel doctors just usually brush the injured workers off and they just send them right back to work. And it is because they're paid by the insurance company. They want to keep getting that money.
And having said that, workers' compensation insurance and the rules for workers' comp, it differs from state to state, right?
Correct.
So, I'll say this. I've heard that in about Jersey rules and the fact that they control the medical the whole time. And imagine that. On the Walt Whitman Bridge when I worked as an ironworker, I probably told you this. I've said it 100 times. When we, the rumor was that, you know, the saying was, if you got injured on the Jersey side, crawl to the PA side, right?
I love that story.
But my point is, so let's just say the insurance the employer has followed the rules. You've signed a panel acknowledgement letter at the time of it. You sign up for your employment. They have a number of doctors, a panel list on the wall that meets the requirements. Can you go and get a second opinion from your own doctor?
Yes, you can. Even before the 90 days runs, you can do that. If you have personal insurance, your personal insurance might have to kick in for that. But usually that can be all worked out down the road.
Right, and most of the time, the people, the doctors that are in this network, and by the way, Robin Lewison, we hope she's feeling better,
yes,
has a great network of medical professionals that are advocates just like you are as an attorney, who cares about the actual health of the actual individual, who will not charge that individual, if it's a work injury when they go to visit them. One of the things that a lot of employers say is, well, you can go to whatever doctor, but we're not paying for it. Well, this individual's never been injured before, so now they're injured. They're afraid they're going to get stuck with a massive bill. Attorneys like yourself and advocates like Robin Lewison make sure that doesn't happen.
Yes, that's correct.
And most of the medical providers say, listen, if they have a great attorney like Paul Robinson on the case, we know she'll fight for our bill. So
yes, absolutely. And I always stress to the client, get the proper treatment. If you go to the panel doctor and they're not ordering MRIs or CAT scans or diagnostic studies,
which can be a nightmare for people.
Well, yeah, of course. But the longer you wait to get those diagnostic studies, that can cause your injury to be more severe and long-lasting.
Oh, by the way, all that we're talking about, trying to keep somebody, up, so they don't lose their house and do all those things, they still have an injury.
Right. They're in pain. They're scared. They're nervous about their future.
How many times, and I know there's not an exact number, but people, that they try to navigate it themselves, they end up at your office after they've tried to do it the right way. All they want to do is go get better, and they run into a buzzsaw when it comes to a panel physician who works for the insurance company. They can't get – how many thousands of patients have not been able to get diagnostics until they've come to your office almost crawling in? And at this point, their injury may never recover, but, you have to do something to get them some quality medical care. How often does that happen?
That happens quite often. I just had a client come in yesterday, injured, clearly rear-ended in a company truck. Someone plowed into him. There weren't even any skid marks. The other driver was doing about 50, 60 an hour, and my client was at a dead stop.
Wow.
No contact with the insurance company. It's like a mom-pop business. Ugh. Had to beg them to put it through to workers' comp. Workers' comp isn't contacting him. And finally, the wife said, we're getting a lawyer, because they have never been through this before. They're nervous. He can't work.
What's your first step when you get that? When you got that case, when somebody walked in your office, what was the first thing you did?
Well, of course, I express my sympathy for the injury and the situation that they're in, but give them options for medical care, because they're not getting it.
Called the employer and. What was your next step?
Well, no, I okay. Never called the employer, but they signed up with me, and I explained what process that we would need to go through. But I need to first order the Bureau records once they're signed up with me, and the Bureau of Workers' Comp won't send any records without a fee agreement being signed. And what the Bureau records show is if the person had any prior work injuries, they show on the current case what documents the adjuster has or has not uploaded into our automated system referred to as WICIS. It's Workers' Comp Automated Integrated System.
And so what happens if the employer doesn't file?
Well, then a claim petition has to be filed, but I first need medical evidence from a doctor in writing saying that they had this work injury on this date and they sustained this injury, which is disabling, as a direct result of the work injury. I need that medical evidence. I can't just file a claim petition.
So you sometimes have to send them to doctors that you know because they have such little diagnostics and little treatment that are getting from the panel doctor.
Yeah, they have to start somewhere because I can't just frivolously file a petition.
So having said that, there's some standard things that happen that people, you know, again, the reasons why you need a great attorney. You get a temporary order of workers' compensation. So you think you have it. I think I have workers' compensation, but I might not realize that it's a temporary, order, and, you know, it could stop at any time, right?
Correct. So what happens is once the claim is sent to the insurance company, it's assigned to an adjuster. The adjusters are supposed to make a decision whether to accept or deny it within 21 days from the receipt they get it, from the date they receive it. Sorry.
That's okay.
So there are various ways that they can accept the claim. A notice of compensation payable is your best ticket. That means that they're going to pay both wage loss and medical benefits. But most adjusters are taking the easy way out and issuing the notice of temporary compensation payable, which is only good for 90 days. Within that 90-day period, they can decide to deny the claim and stop that notice of temporary comp. And if that happens, a claim petition must be filed by an attorney because they're denying it. Another way they could accept it is medical only, through a notice of compensation payable or a temporary notice of compensation payable. And if it's medical only, they're not going to get any wage loss benefits.
We're at the beginning of the claim. Okay. Let's talk about, along with, you know, the temporary, you know, order, let's talk about some other, and you mentioned them. Okay, some other strategies, you know, used by the other side that are very detrimental often to the worker. You know, light duty, okay? You said it. Light duty, a previous injury. What do they call that?
Pre-existing
injury. I got injured in high school, okay? Been working as an iron worker for 20 years, never missed a day's work, and all of a sudden I get injured and, oh, but, you know, in my leg, and all of a sudden I you know, oh, that's a direct result of what happened 22 years ago.
Yeah. And that's so ridiculous. And what I make sure to do is have the injured worker testify that they worked full duty, full time, and often cases overtime at this job for an extended period of years or had other employment and had no problems. So that they try to use that as an excuse, but to me it's weak. But you have to bring it out.
Yeah, and you got to litigate it, right? In other words, you know, unfortunately, when that happens, you know, they know they're just delaying. In other words,
well, yeah, and especially if they issued the medical only NCP notice of comp payable or the temporary notice of comp payable, they're not accepting disability. They're not paying wage loss. So you have to file a claim petition. And the unfortunate thing, and I feel bad for people and I watch their faces just drop when I tell them this, but I have to, the litigation could take 9 months to a year. That's a long time to be without any benefits and no paycheck and in pain.
How do you keep cases with that strategy that they're doing? Like, how do you? I guess because people are so injured. But how often do people end up having to go back to work to their own physical and their physical detriment? Does that happen? They get smoked out in a sense,
right? Well, they either do that, or if they really honestly cannot physically do it, they have to go to something else. But one thing I want to touch on is at the first hearing, when you, with any petition that you file, the judge will ask you if both parties are interested in a mandatory mediation, and that's a chance to settle your case.
Early in the game?
Early, okay. But it's not always good to settle, because if you're really hurt and you need medical treatment,
yeah,
you know, that's not really doing your client a service to settle early.
Right, right, exactly.
Because
they'll end up with a, you know, some ridiculously low settlement that could, you know, maybe not do much, and now all of a sudden they're hurt and they can never go back to work.
Right, and the injured worker doesn't get the advantage that the insurance company does of paying what we call pursuant to the cost containment provisions of the Workers' Comp Act. So if they get a bill for $20,000 for a surgery, they don't pay $20,000. They'll pay a fraction of that. I think it's like 110% of what Medicare pays.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So we got about a minute and a half. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about light duty, okay? Because, you know, there are some a lot of times, and we've heard these nightmare stories, a doctor will look at somebody, and by the way, most especially union workers, they want to go back to work, folks. They're making ridiculous money. They got big mortgages and all these things, and it doesn't benefit them to stay out, okay? But they get put on something called light duty. We are going to talk more about light duty, and we're going to have more from Taking Charge with Paula Robinson when we come back.
Suffering a work injury can be a debilitating experience. Trying to navigate the workers' compensation system and process on your own can make it even worse. From the point of injury to the culmination of your claim and everything in between, certified workers' compensation attorney and specialist Paula Robinson will handle every facet of your workers' compensation matter to ensure that you get the representation and results you need in the face of a system that often treats injured workers like they don't matter. If you get injured on the job, call Workers' Compensation Attorney Paula Robinson of Robinson Law at 215-530-7166 or go to robinsonlawyer.com. That's Robinson, LWYR.com, and get the support, the representation, and results you need to get back on your feet again.
I'm Naheem Hines, running back for the Indianapolis Colts and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Taking Charge with Paula Robinson. Our host is Paula Robinson, workers' compensation attorney, the law office. It's Robinson Law.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about her fantastic website that she just got, you know, done, and it's so much great information on there. While we're on the topic, what's the website address?
It's www.robinsonlwyr.com.
Awesome. And you'll find all kinds of great information on that website. Let's touch base just on that light duty. A lot of panel doctors will send somebody on light duty. They're confused. They're sitting in a room, counting bolts or, mm-hmm. Or washers or something ridiculous for 8 hours, almost like cruel.
Yes.
Or in some cases, there is no light duty. You go on an ironworking job, you're working. And what are people required to do? Are they required to try light duty? What if they can't do it? Talk about that.
Yes. If your employer sends you a letter or communicates somehow that they have light duty or some type of job for you to return back to, it might even be your regular job, I tell my clients, you have to go back and you have to try it, because workers' compensation judges don't like it if you're given the opportunity to go back to work and you refuse. You have to go.
What if you're on a medication and you can't, you know, you're on a pain medication and you're, you know, it's detrimental to your health to even get out, to, you know, to even walk outside?
Well, here's the deal. They have to go back and try it.
Okay.
Give it a good faith effort. It might only be a day, two days.
Okay.
And then if you can't do it because of the work injury or because of medication, because of the work injury, complain, make your voice heard, and then go straight to an emergency room or an urgent care or get to your doctor. Don't go home. Don't go to a friend's house. Go straight to get medical attention. And I tell people, keep your claim information locked up in your glove box, because then you can give it to the provider and ask them, explain to them you've been asked to return to work. Here's why you're having difficulty, and ask them to take you out of work.
So you have to give it a shot.
Yes.
It's important to give it a shot.
And the other thing I want to note is when they do go back to work, the carrier is supposed to file a a notification of suspension of their wage loss benefits if they're on comp. They have to file that form saying, well, they returned back to work, and it's a notification to suspend or modify their benefits. And I tell people, as soon as you get that, and I check on WICUS because they have to file it there as well, then we can file a challenge to that. And we only have 20 days to file the challenge. Once I file a challenge saying they can't keep working, it goes before a workers' comp judge. 9 out of 10 times, the challenge will be granted so they can start getting their workers' comp benefits again.
Sure.
And then the carrier can file a petition to suspend after the challenge is granted.
Okay. And so there's a number of different type of petitions you have to, you know, file and deal with. Talk about that.
There are many, many petitions. We don't have time to discuss them all here, but the carrier will at some point send the person for an IME, an independent medical evaluation, even if they're not on comp. If it's a claim petition, they'll send them to a doctor to see for about 10 minutes. The doctor is supposed to review the medical records and then come to an opinion as to that person's condition and their work capability. So the insurance carrier can also file petitions. They would be modification of the wage loss benefits, suspension of the benefits, or termination, which is the worst, that they try to stop the wage loss and the medical. So, but one thing that I pride myself on is that I've written approximately 210 blogs to educate the public, and they're all on my website, and I've done YouTube videos. I just had a client. he told me that he was wanting some more information about a mediation, and he said, I typed in Pennsylvania workers' comp mediation. He said, your YouTube popped up.
And that's awesome.
And it helped me.
That's great.
So, but it's important to educate people because they want to know what's happening to them.
Right. Well, one of the problems, it's probably the biggest issue, is that they're not educated. And you're a certified workers' compensation specialist. Let me just tell people what that is. In the state of Pennsylvania, what's it? Is it the Supreme Court or the Attorney General?
The Supreme Court
has a special certification for workers' compensation attorneys because it's such a complicated area. Okay, so you don't want to go to a ear, nose, and throat specialist if your knee's killing you. Well, it's the same with an attorney. There's a lot of general practice attorneys out there that are good at doing general stuff, but you don't want them going to work. You know, if they're not a specialist in workers' comp, you know, you want it. You want a specialist. That's how specialized this is. So imagine if an attorney can't navigate it, who's not a workers' comp attorney. even a personal injury attorney likely will take a case but will pass it off to a certified workers' comp attorney as a referral. But the, I guess what I'm saying is, let alone us trying to do it ourselves.
Right. And another important thing to remember is when you specialize in workers' comp, we do this day in and day out, and you get to know the judges. You know what judge has specific rules. They all have rules, and they're all listed on WICUS for us. But you really get to know the judges and their likes and dislikes, and they're people just like we are.
Sure.
And you can – I mean, I tell my client this is the judge we have, and this is the way it's going to go, and I prep them for that. That's equally as important.
And have you ever seen anybody try to navigate, you know, represent themselves in workers' comp court?
A person
without an attorney.
I just had a call the other day of someone that went before a very particular judge.
Okay.
They tried to do it themselves, and the judges will tell you, get a lawyer.
Yeah.
They'll give you 30 days to retain
counsel.
I'm assuming
the judge, you know, like in other words, would be much more short with an attorney that was not following protocol.
Yes.
Than a layperson who's out there, you know, maybe they don't know that there's a contingency fee agreement and there's no out of pocket cost for anybody to come and see you. Talk about that if you would, real quick.
Okay. Well, when we represent injured workers, our fee is 20% contingent fee. That is set by the Department of Labor and Industry. The Bureau of Workers' Comp falls under that. It's in the legislation. That's what we are allowed to charge. We don't charge for the initial consultation. We don't charge hourly. And I do this, and most attorneys do this. We pay for all the litigation costs out of our own pocket, and that client is never responsible for those because it can get costly pretty
quickly.
Yes. So if I need to take a doctor's deposition because I can't just submit a report, they run anywhere from $2,500 to $7,000 for the first hour, depending on the doctor.
Wow.
So, and the doctors want paid for all the medical records. They do nothing for free.
There's no out of pocket costs,
right,
for the injured worker.
Correct.
But that doesn't mean there's no cost that you pay. You actually put front those costs, right?
Right, and then we get paid separately by the insurance company if we're successful in getting them benefits, retaining their benefits, and or settling the case.
However, if you don't, doesn't come out of the worker's pocket, correct?
Correct, and I made a bad decision.
Yeah, right, right. But thankfully, in your case, obviously, you're very successful. But you know, there are situations everywhere.
Sure.
Having said that, more on the petitions.
Oh, okay. There are on the claimant side of things, there are petitions, say, for a specific loss. If you have scarring above your clavicle or you have an amputation, you can file a petition for that. There, of course, is a petition for compromise and release agreement. That typically is filed by the insurance company. There are different petitions for utilization reviews dealing with medical treatment. And a lot of these are dealt with in my blogs, giving a simple layman's explanation as to what the petitions are about.
Okay. And you mentioned the independent medical exam and you know, a lot of people chuckle about that because it's really not independent. But, you know, a lot of people call them, a lot of attorneys call them defense medical exams. And you mentioned something interesting, that it was sometimes only a 10-minute meeting.
Usually, that's it.
Yeah, and I've heard, how can they have any credibility? Plus, a lot of these doctors are making huge bucks just doing them. You know, talk about how somebody who sees somebody for 10 minutes can actually have, and what's the experience like?
I don't think they're particularly credible only seeing them for that length of time. They'll testify that they reviewed medical records, but I had a deposition of a doctor actually in this building, and it was a defense doctor, And he walked in with his file because I'm entitled to see what he reviewed. I can question him about what he reviewed. So my file was approximately 6 inches of medical records. And when I walked in, he had about a half an inch. So I cross-examined him and asked him what, you know, if that was the extent of the medical records he reviewed, and it was. We ended up either settling or winning that case, but most of the time, in my opinion, they're not found to be credible. The judges know; they just see them briefly.
Yeah, and exactly. How do they even give them any credibility? It's just, you know.
It's been that way, Joe, forever and ever.
Well, you know, having said that, talk about, you know, the importance of you know, seeing a quality doctor as well, not only to help obviously heal you, but also the importance of having a quality doctor to often refute some of those, the 10 minutes, you know, you see a quality doctor for a year, you know, four times
over
a week.
Over and over and over.
Right. This individual knows you better than you know yourself. And one of the great things about, you know, these doctors that are advocates, they'll also not only treat you and get you better, but they'll also testify on your behalf.
Correct.
Talk about that.
It's very important to have a doctor who understands the workers' compensation system. And, I mean, like the insurance company will send the individual to a doctor. Well, we can give the client options as to different doctors who they can go to for a second opinion or to start serious treatment and or surgery.
I've heard, have you ever been to one of those independent medical exams? Have you ever had to go on behalf of somebody?
Yes.
Okay. How are they? Is it a salty kind of experience? You know, they don't.
Yeah,
you know.
They'll say right up front, don't ask me any questions. I'm not here to examine you. I mean, they may as well just say, I'm here to collect money.
To screw you over, right? I'm here to, you know, shove it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I got it. You know, I mean, I tell you, it's a disgrace. We've had some really good doctors on these programs.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have a lawyer, that's an adversarial situation with when it comes to a lawyer and a often a panel doctor or an IME doctor. I'd like to bring in an advocate, a doctor's advocate, some of the doctors that we, you know, that care about their patients in there with them. So
right.
That they, you know, they can have their own peer looking them in the eye and going, boy, you are what you are.
Well, and oftentimes the IME doctors are independent contractors and they work for different outfits that do just IMEs.
I mean, to me, you know, I've heard judges, you know, sometimes feel a way about, you know, a medical provider that only treats injured workers and all that. I'd be like, yo, buddy, let's be real about this. Look at, you know, this list of IME specialists and all them. They shouldn't even be allowed in the parking lot. It's just infuriating. Thank God there's attorneys like yourself that are able to pick these people apart. But they, you know, that, remember we started the show off talking about your family doctor and how much,
right?
You know, it's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
The contrary to that, where somebody's there and the only thing they care about, in my opinion, is their pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Some of them make some massive money just doing them IMEs.
Yeah.
Is it fun for you to get them on the stand and just pick them apart? It must be like taking candy from a baby.
I do enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely, you know, it's,
and it makes me, you know, feel good because I'm serving somebody, I'm helping someone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Another thing I just wanted to add about my revamped website is
let's talk about that.
Oh, okay. There's a toggle at the bottom, so the website can be read in English and or Spanish. The whole website will translate to Spanish.
Oh, great!
Yes,
that's fantastic.
Yeah.
What? Just a little overview. You have the blogs on the website.
Yes, there's I think 210.
210.
Yes.
Boy, I tell you, you're really schlepping it there. That's only 210. My God, that's
yeah.
No, but it's fantastic. And talk about some of the topics, you know, that some of the blogs are on.
Well, the topics are really related to workers' comp, and what I try to do is think about what people get in the mail, or if they're in a situation where they've had an injury, what questions would they have? So I have blogs and YouTubes. What is an IME? Independent medical evaluation, and I explain that. What is a modification petition? What is a notice of compensation payable? And then there's so many I can't remember them all. But it's really to help the public.
Absolutely, and so let's kind of move along. You're get past your IMEs and all those situations. How long does a normal workers' compensation case that goes the distance, how long can that last?
Well, till you get a judge's decision, it could be 9 months to a year, because the judges typically set a trial schedule. So they give the claimant, let's just say on a claim petition, the injured worker's attorney has 90 days to take their doctor's deposition. The IME has to be done within 45 days of that first hearing, and then they take their doctor's deposition 90 days after ours. And then depending on if there's fact witnesses for either side, there could be numerous hearings scheduled. Claimant usually testifies at the first hearing unless it's a pretrial. And then the judge has 3 months from the date the briefs are submitted after the last hearing. They have, under the judge's rules, 3 months to issue a decision.
Now, how much are workers' comp benefits? How are they calculated for per individual?
Oh, okay. So the insurance carrier, the adjuster, has to prepare something called a statement of wages. So they get all the earnings from the employer, and then depending on how long the employee has worked there, there's different ways to calculate the statement of wages. So on that statement is something called the average weekly wage. That's the gross amount that they earned,
when they were working.
Correct. And then the compensation rate is based off of that.
Is that like two-thirds in some cases, or how's that work?
Well, there's a rating chart, and it changes every year because there's something called statewide average weekly wage.
Okay.
And that increases every year. But if you have a low-paying job, like say you're a waitress and you only make a couple bucks an hour and in tips, it would be 90%.
Okay.
Your comp rate would be 90%.
Oh, okay.
It's not always 66 and two-thirds. And then if you're over a certain amount, you get the max comp rate.
Got you.
And another thing I should mention is if you are like an EMT or a volunteer firefighter, I always ask my clients that because they bump up to the highest rate.
Really?
Because they're serving their community.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And the state, wants to acknowledge that. So that's something you have to ask. And then also if they have concurrent employment, like let's say I have a client now, she got hurt at a part-time job.
Right.
And her full-time job paid her much, much more. And we're fighting that because the insurance company doesn't want to pay anything because she's still working her part-time job because her doctor has her on restrictions. The employer up till recently was abiding by those restrictions. So I had written to the other employer. They gave me documentation as to why she was let go. It was because of the work injury.
Sure.
But again, that attorney, the defense attorney's objecting on the base of hearsay, so now I had to subpoena that person to testify at a hearing before the judge.
So how long can work comp benefits actually last? Could it be a lifetime?
Could.
And when you settle, okay, and how does that typically work? Do you settle with the benefits, without the benefits?
Yeah, the carriers want to settle everything. They want to get rid of the medical, and they want to get rid of the wage loss. So let's say you have someone on workers' comp, and we decide to settle. We do it either ourselves, we negotiate, or go to a mediation. So once we agree on a number, then a compromise and release hearing will be scheduled. And then that's usually about 2 weeks after you decide on a number. So the wage loss benefits and the medical will usually continue up until that date of the compromise and release agreement hearing, and the judge approves the lump sum settlement, and then you don't get any more.
Now, can you settle but keep the medical going?
You can, yeah.
How often does that happen?
Maybe 5% of the cases.
Really?
Yeah.
But whose decision is that? Is it? I guess it's everybody's decision, because
right.
if the client doesn't want to, if the client wants the medical, then they don't have to settle if they don't want to do that, correct?
Right.
The insurance companies don't want to keep the medical going, right?
No, they don't. They want everything shut down if possible. And then if you do keep the medical open, they try to put the screws to you by giving you a lesser lump sum.
Sure. Absolutely. And having said that, workers' compensation, a lot of people think they're suing their employer. They're really not. It's insurance, right? So you're not allowed to sue your employer, correct?
Yes, that's correct. You cannot civilly sue your employer. Workers' comp is the exclusive remedy. There are some exceptions.
Right.
But
very rare.
Yeah.
And that, by the way, just so you know, I do my homework. The Grand Bargain, which was in 1908, of course, I remember that well. but you gave up, I guess, obviously early in the 20th century, we gave up the opportunity or the ability to sue our employer for workers' comp insurance. I get a kick out of it, though, because that you could they're always trying to gut it. You got the right wing always trying to gut the workers' compensation. But thank God the attorneys are so passionate about the Trial Lawyers Association and fighting on behalf of people that aren't even injured yet. Otherwise, we would end up like Jersey in some areas where, they control the medical. You're not hurt no matter what. That's not true. I'm being sarcastic,
yeah.
But you get my point. So having said that, Paula, we are coming to the conclusion to the fastest hour in radio. Is there anything else you want to cover? I want to make sure we get, because your website's phenomenal. There's so much there. And we talked about the point of injury. We talked about, obviously temporary, orders of workers' compensation, the whole deal, petitions. And anything else you want to cover?
Yes, I want to tell people that when they call me, they get me. They don't get anybody else. I answer my own phone. Oftentimes I say, hello, hello. And they're like, I thought that was a voicemail.
Yeah.
But I answer my own phone. I do everything except my marketing.
That's right. Well, and that's the benefit of a boutique firm. You get to speak to Paula Robinson, and you get the person on the door and on the website. You get the opportunity to not only speak with, but to be represented by Paula. Awesome show.
Thank you.
Contact information one more time for our listeners.
My phone number is 215-530-7166. Website www.robinsonlwyr.com, and my email is on the website as well. And there's capacity for the Spanish speaking people to click a different phone number on the website to speak with the person that answers for me in Spanish.
Absolutely. Listen, awesome show.
Thank you.
Great
Thanks
job
for having me.
My pleasure, and fantastic website. That's Paula Robinson, Taking Charge with Paula Robinson. I'm going to thank everybody for tuning into the broadcast. On behalf of Paula Robinson, shout out to TJ in the producer's room.
Thank you.
I'm Joe Dougherty.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Mm-hmm.